You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Live across Wisconsin on Civic Media, you're listening to Mornings with Pat Kreitlow, powered by Up North News. Now, from our Lake Wissota studio, here is the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Hey, good morning. It is 7:06. Nice to have you here up north on this Wednesday morning, July 2nd, 2025. Parker Olson's down in Madison in Studio A2. We'll chat with him again in just a little bit. And we have a guest, State Representative Angela Stroud, who will be joining us shortly as well. Brittany Merlot is off today, so keep listening to your favorite Civic Media radio station throughout the day for updates on your local forecast. But let me tell you who else is coming up along the network today. Coming up after this fine program is a finer program, Matinair on Air with Jane Matinair and Greg Bach. Dan Schaefer will be appearing there at 9:30 this morning to talk about the state budget agreement. A little after 10 a.m., they will be joined by Darren Von Ruden, president of the Wisconsin Farmers Union. Do you remember the Oprah Winfrey joke? Was it Dave Letterman that told it when he was hosting the Oscars and talking about Uma Thurman? Oprah? That's kind of me with Darren Von Ruden and Derek Van Orden. You don't want to get those two confused. They could not be more opposite in their one is actually dedicated to farmers and improving the rural economy of Wisconsin. The other's a member of Congress. On the Todd Alba Show, I will join Todd at 2 o'clock along with Trygve Olson from the Lincoln Project. And then the Maggie Dawn Show, a special edition at 4 o'clock today called Freedom Under Attack, including guests David Volker, a UW Green Bay professor of humanities and history, Howard Schweber, a UW professor of American politics and political theory, and at 5:06, Kathy Kramer, UW professor and chair of letters and science in American politics. And then finally, Nightlight with Pete Schwaba from 6 to 8 tonight includes a visit with Milwaukee film critic Matt Mueller and director Wendy Schneider. All of that ahead across the Civic Media Radio Network. Brewers were rained out yesterday, so there is a doubleheader today. Two games with the New York Mets, and it's a split doubleheader. So tune in at 11:35 this morning for pregame, for the makeup game, game one of the series with the Mets, and then 5:35 tonight for game two when Jacob Mizorowski will be pitching. Freddy Peralta is doing the opening game, again, pregame at 11:35. When we originally booked State Representative Angela Stroud from the Ashland area, it was because she had to vote no on a bill that was purportedly going to help with the removal of lead water service lines in the Superior area, but there were strings attached. Since that time, since we booked her as a guest, there have been some very positive developments in that area, and so we're very happy to welcome Angela to the program now to tell us what's the latest in Superior. We'll talk about the whole range of the problem and the different ways you could address it, and hopefully a way that works out best for all parties concerned. Angela Stroud, how are you? Good morning.
Well, thanks. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, you bet. So that's kind of, you know, the setup was there was this bill and you weren't thoroughly happy with it. But what has happened, you know, since the bill was being considered in the legislature?
Yeah. So this bill would change state law to give the last private water utility, Superior Water, Light and Power, access to public money to replace lead service lines. And the way that the Republicans who introduced the legislation seem to think about it is, let's just change state law and no big deal. For me, it's a really big deal when we change state law, especially giving a for-profit private company access to public dollars. So my thinking the whole time was, well, what is it? What's in it for the customers of Superior? How do we get the best deal possible for them? And I had some concerns. So one of my biggest concerns was the cost of replacement. The company was citing an average cost of replacement that was twice the statewide average. And even though they would get access to public money, customers would still be left with 25% of that cost. So when you have what seemed to be an inflated cost, then the remainder is passed on to customers and we're giving public money to a private company. It just wasn't good enough. We needed something in return, a better deal. And so for the last few months, I've been working really hard to try to figure out a deal between the company and the city of Superior. And we didn't have a deal when the bill went to the floor. So I was a no vote. And until we got a deal, I was going to stay a no. And I was going to encourage the governor to veto it. But on one of the last possible days, we got a deal.
Yes, you did. And did not, you know, just accept what was given to you in the form of a bill, because I'm sure you're aware, voting no on a bill that purports to help your own constituents, whether we like it or not, that's something that people from the opposing party would try to use as a club and beat you over the head with it. She voted no against removing lead water lines in her own district, but you were looking for a better deal. And so you feel now that this agreement that goes along with it, how did that go? Did you find willing participants? Was it a smooth process? Who all deserves, you know, credit for making this happen?
Yeah, so on the first point, it's clear that there were political dynamics at play about trying to target me. And so we can dig into that if you want. But to the good news, what really happened was, you know, the city and the utility, they have a long history, way before any of us were born. But the current leadership, you know, they've had some things happen where there wasn't a whole lot of trust. And so there was an interest in getting the bill from the utility. And the city, as I engaged more and more with the city, they started to sort of come around to the idea that there could be a benefit for the city as well. So my job really was to try to get these two entities who weren't really on great terms to build trust and get to a place where they could both see the win-win. And so I spent a lot of time with both parties, really kind of talking through how I saw the issue, how I saw the benefits, listening to them, trying to address some of their concerns. And you know, that took time, but now I think trust has been built and a relationship has formed and a partnership has formed. And really who wins are the people in the city of Superior who now don't have an average out-of-pocket cost of $2,500 each. So for me, that's a huge win. And we turned a real potential sort of liability into something that is a massive benefit for the city.
Were the Republicans who were behind the bill that was eventually, you know, passed and signed, would they count among the willing partners in negotiating a better deal for homeowners, or were they just hoping the law would be signed and that would be it?
I honestly don't think they had any idea about any of it. I don't think they knew what the implications were for the public. I don't think they knew, for example, that the city has an interest in acquiring the utility. I don't know if they knew that the city council voted down a proposal of support for the bill. Like, there's just so much that goes into a change like this. But to be a good representative, you have to be on the ground asking questions and, most importantly, listening. And it was just very clear to me they weren't aware of any of the dynamics. They just thought, well, this is simple. Let's change this law and give the company access to money. I don't think, you know, we should ever act that way when we're changing state law, and especially when we're talking about giving public money to a for-profit company.
Yeah. I mean, there is a real difference in whether your representative or state senator is on the ground in that particular area. We're talking to State Representative Angela Stroud from the 73rd Assembly District in that area, where you and all manner of other legislators will be looking at this new state budget agreement. And I want to ask you about that. But actually, before I forget, I did want to come back and ask about the history of all of this, because I know Earl Ingram in Milwaukee reminds us about this all the time. When we talk about lead water service lines, so many people think of it as some kind of Milwaukee-only problem. And this whole episode really serves to remind us that there are places all over the state where this is an issue. I had no idea it was this big of an issue in Superior until this came up.
Yeah, I mean, one of the great things about the new maps and more diverse representation around the state is we need to realize that in a lot of ways, my district has more in common with Milwaukee than with other parts of the state, and certainly more in common with Milwaukee than suburban areas. Because I really think the distinction isn't urban versus rural. I think it's urban and rural versus the suburbs, because the suburbs are new construction, which, no surprise, our entire shared revenue formula is about new construction. They get tons of resources, tons of advantages. But these older cities, and that's really what this is about, older cities with old infrastructure and in some cases shrinking populations, another thing that Milwaukee and my district have in common, we have different challenges. So, you know, Ashland and Superior, these are really, really old cities. And as a result, we need infusions of dollars to replace infrastructure of all kinds, including lead lines. And this is, brings me up another point, though, taking money from this public pool, you know, that's serious business because we're taking from cities like Milwaukee or other cities. And so that's just another reason to tread carefully in a decision like this and not to treat it like it's just something simplistic.
That's right. Alicia writes on YouTube. Oops, sorry. Let's get this one here. We've got the lead water service lines in Kimberley as well. And again, you've got in Superior and Milwaukee, you've got these ports on Great Lakes with the infrastructure that is, you know, tied into that to a degree, you know, in past history. And it's good to be mindful of, you know, the whole range of the problem before you just immediately accept what is given to you by, say, the private sector. So, again, getting back to my next question of you having to meet with the full assembly and consider the state budget deal, and I have been going over all the details of it, it is most definitely going to get a wide array of Democrats for and against and Republicans for and against. Probably going to be the most bipartisan, the raw bipartisan vote on a budget we've seen in a long time. How are you feeling about it right now?
I'm still digging in. I mean, unfortunately, this process has been totally rushed. This isn't how we should do good government. The party of chaos continues to be the party of chaos, forcing really just bad governance practices. So, you know, I'm up early in part, not just for this, but because I'm still digging into the budget. I have super big concerns about public school funding in particular. I mean, by not raising general aid, what we're doing is putting more pressure on property taxes yet again. So it's kind of crazy to me that we would be touting that this budget has tax cuts at the same time that by refusing to raise general aid for schools, local school districts are going to have to raise property taxes to meet their levy. So this a tax cut in one pocket and then raising taxes in the other pocket, really we have to ask what is the net benefit and to whom? And for working and middle-class people, it's not actually going to net out to a tax cut or to a benefit. And meanwhile, schools are the ones who are going to be blamed for having to raise their revenues through property taxes. So yet again, the state legislature is failing to meet the needs of public schools. And it's just super disappointing that we're having this conversation yet again.
So you think that the conversations will continue for folks who think that this budget just didn't go far enough to urge Governor Evers to just veto the whole thing, even though he worked out the deal, but there are people that would still like to just scrap this and try again.
I mean, that would be my position. That is my position, that we shouldn't do that. We shouldn't sign a bill into law that actually harms communities. I mean, it's really hard to undo 15 years of neglect of public schools in one budget. I understand that. But by refusing to increase general aid, we're just contributing to the problem yet again. So yeah, there is a small increase in special ed. That's huge. That's helpful. But you have to think about public school budgets as multifaceted. It's not just one thing. And when you have a big problem, it takes big solutions, not just fixing one part of the problem.
We are talking to State Representative Angela Stroud from the Ashland area, 73rd Assembly District, about things that are happening up there. A local update is coming up next for some of you. And then when we're all back together in 15 minutes, we will be talking to a retired pediatric nurse and school board member about her letter to the WIAA, critical of their new restrictions on transgender sports participation. So stick around for that. And then in our next hour, we will be talking to Earl Ingram and Melissa Baldoff with our climate check. From the heart of America's up north, live from Lake Wissota, thanks for making this the place to spend part of your mornings. I'm Pat Kreitlow. This is the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
All right, Brittany Merlot is off today, but Robin Tigerton, he does not take a day off. Good morning from Tigerton, he writes on YouTube. It's sunny and 65 degrees. Yesterday, I mowed 7 yards in Tigerton. One of my customers gave me a sub sandwich and a bottle of Gatorade. Today, I have mowing jobs in Wittenberg. I'm scheduled to be doing tomorrow, so I don't have to mow on the 4th of July. It is going to be a hot one on the 4th of July. He said yesterday he was going to have lasagna, but one of his customers gave me a sub sandwich, which was better on a warm day. It is, in fact, Lasagna Awareness Month, and we'll probably talk about that tomorrow. And he mentions a day-night doubleheader, something you don't often see in Major League Baseball nowadays. There was a time when they played a lot of doubleheaders, especially on Sundays. Yeah, I remember those very well. I loved bonus baseball that way. But instead, the bonus baseball comes accidentally, like it does today. Brewers and Mets, after last night's game was rained out, 11:35 this morning for the pregame on Game 1. Freddie Peralta will be pitching for the Brewers versus the Mets. And then come on back at 5:35 this evening for Game 2, and that will be Jacob Mizorowski pitching for the Brewers against the Mets, all here on stations belonging to the Civic Media Radio Network. Let's continue now with State Representative Angela Stroud from the Ashland area, who, so that leads me, I'm going to ask about the Northland College closing in a moment here, but it also notes in your bio that you have described as a very antisocial rescue border collie named May, the cutest dog of all time. What's the update since the election and all the campaigning? Any less antisocial?
No, she still will destroy anyone who tries to come up our driveway. But she's so sweet. Once she knows you and feels comfortable that you're not an intruder, then she's great. The one thing is every time I pack a suitcase, she knows what's happening and she's not happy about it. So that's been hard. Being away from the dog has been a hard part of this job.
And you make the big drive from Ashland down to Madison for this. Yeah. Who was I was serving with Gary Sherman from Port Wing for all those years, talking about those drives, and they are not easy. Wouldn't it be great if we had a train system in the state?
But God, I'd love it.
That's a whole different thing. So with the closing of Northland College up there and you and all the other educators up there who have been part of the community, I don't have any happy way to ask this, just to ask how the community has been in the weeks since the closure.
When a college closes for summer, it feels kind of like normal. But the difference is, the grass is getting a little taller and we all know that people aren't coming back for the first time in 132 years. So it's challenging. It's difficult. We have a core group of people who are trying to figure out uses for the campus. There's a lot of excitement and enthusiasm about that idea. It continues to be a bit unclear what the board is thinking in terms of how they're going to move forward with the campus. So there's a lot of uncertainty, but there's a lot of potential still. And, one of the things I've been trying to do is help figure out how to transform this into an opportunity that could be great for the community.
Mm-hmm. There's a theme that you sounded and that was sounded yesterday as well when it came to the budget deal that folks will be voting on today. And that is that this whole notion of fair maps led us to a fair budget. Not a great budget, maybe not even a very good budget, but a fair budget, which would not have happened without fair maps. And I mean, you can truly testify to that in an area where the last set of rigged maps meant that in a heavily Democratic area along the south shore of Lake Superior there was no Democratic district, no Democratic representation there. You've been in office now for 6 months or so. How different does it feel for your constituents up there to have a voice again?
Oh, they're so happy. They're so happy. I mean, if you look at, national elections, if you look at the last presidential going back decades, you'll see Douglas County, Bayfield County, Ashland County, they always go blue. And in some Bayfield County, it's not even close. So the idea that there wasn't a single state representative north of Eau Claire prior to these new maps just shows the degree of gerrymandering. And, there's some spiteful Republicans who say this map is gerrymandered. Depending on how you carve it up, we could have more than one Democrat up here. That would be considered fair depending on how you drew the boundaries. I happen to love the shape of my district, South Shore of Lake Superior. There's a real logic to that. We have a lot in common when you think about the Lake Shore. So I hope the shape of my district never changes. I love the city of Superior all the way to the Bad River Reservation. But I understand if it were to change, to make sure that Democratic representation reflects the actual distribution of the population. That's not a crazy concept. That's exactly what we should have in a democracy. But my constituents, I should show you some emails I get. They are just so pleased to have someone who is really representing them and who's spending a lot of time in the district trying to understand their perspective and then fight in Madison for what they need.
Oh, I know. And not to reminisce too much, but I mean, when, you know, my first year career was at a radio station in Rice Lake, and the brand new legislators in that area were Bob Jauch and Mary Hubler. And I started this talk show in Rice Lake, and they were among my most frequent guests because they were brand new legislators themselves and wanted to, you know, have a voice all over the district that would serve. And of course, you kept, as I mentioned, Gary Sherman and Janet Bewley and all kinds of folks who, shall we say, quite fairly represented, you know, the wide range of the areas there, and did so fairly and with a true sense of service. So the budget will probably wrap up this week. What's your first order of business when it's all done?
Getting on the boat and being on Lake Superior. 4th of July, that's what I plan to do.
That is the correct answer. Yes, you are really good at this. You have simply got to unplug now and then, especially after what you managed to do to help out the homeowners in Superior, removing their lead water service lines. State Representative Angela Stroud, thank you so much for the visit. We really appreciate it. Thanks for all you do.
Anytime. Thanks so much.
All right. Thank you. And when we come back, we will talk about the WIAA and its transgender policy on sports participation in Wisconsin high schools, and then have much more in our 8 o'clock hour, including our climate check with Melissa Baldoff. A reminder, you can sign up for our newsletters at Up North News. Just head over to upnorthnewswi.com and click on subscribe up in the top banner of the homepage. We'd love to have you as a subscriber there. More coming up right after this break and the Midwest Farm Report. You're up north. . 7:35 now on these mornings, powered by Up North News on the Civic Media Radio Network. On the text line, Tom in Hartford, another great guest, Pat. It's uplifting to hear an intelligent, caring representative. Ain't it, though? It's just nice and refreshing when you get that compared to some of the things that you see out there in the news cycle. This is going to be a big day in Madison, not just because the legislature's meeting on the budget, but the Wisconsin Supreme Court has announced that today it will release its decision on its interpretation of an 1849 statute that some had purported to be an abortion ban. Others interpreted it as doing something else about protecting pregnant women. The law has been on hold since a Dane County judge ruled, I believe in the fall of 2023, that the law did not apply to consensual abortions. It was appealed to the state Supreme Court, and the state Supreme Court heard oral arguments in the case last November and is now ready to issue its ruling. And so that will come sometime today. So keep it tuned to your favorite shows across the Civic Media Radio Network to learn more. Let's turn now to a matter in our schools about participation in sports and other activities, and especially as it relates to members of the transgender community, that we're going to meet with a guest from the Baraboo area who is a retired pediatric nurse, sits on the school board, but is going to join us in a private capacity, and wrote a letter to the WIAA expressing concerns about a policy that restricts transgender student athletes to participate only in the sports categories corresponding to their sex assigned at birth. So let's learn more about that and what perhaps might be a better way forward with Carolyn Bonanno, who joins us now from Baraboo. Carolyn, good morning. Thank you for being here. How are you?
I'm good. It's frustrating, but good.
It does sound frustrating. You note in your letter to the members of the board of the Wisconsin Interscholastic Activities Association that their policy fails to account for current scientific understanding and may not serve the best interests of all student athletes. And you say this as a retired registered pediatric nurse and somebody who has certainly followed school matters carefully on school boards. So can you talk a bit more about, you know, what prompted the letter and then, you know, basically your overview of the policies that prompted the letter?
Because I am on a board and I learned about this and I had been hearing rumblings and I always heard that, well, this isn't true, that they shouldn't, it's not scientifically sound. And so I decided to do some of my own research because facts seem to be able to speak louder than feelings. And I think it's important. So I looked it up and I tried to find things that said that transgender women had an ability over other female athletes. And there was very little evidence to that at all. And as my brother said to me the other day, this whole thing, it just seems to be a solution to a problem that doesn't exist. And I think that it puts our most vulnerable students at higher risk. And so I just felt it was so wrong. And it's kind of like the first steps to dictatorship. This happened immediately after Trump wrote his letter, his executive order banning transgender females, and this only and WIA's policy only refers to transgender females. It doesn't look at anything else. I don't think they did any research whatsoever. They just followed along. They were in lockstep.
Yeah, it does have very much the sense of just a bit of political backlash, if you will, to things like legalizing same-sex marriage. Then there's another, let's find a new category of people to bash. You write that current research indicates that athletic performance differences are more complex than a simple binary categorization of assigned sex at birth, and that athletic performance varies enormously among individuals within any gender category. And that really gets to one of the things that has really stuck with me, is this ridiculous sense that somebody, a minor or an adult, would go through what you need to go through just to win a race? I mean, I thought it was silly on its face, but I mean, like you said, you had to look into the fact based of it to say between individual variations and simple binary categorization, there's a lot more to this than the surface talking points.
Yes, and it kind of boggles the mind as to why people would think that this is true. I mean, one of my first experiences as a school board member, I've only been on for about a year, a little over a year, was sitting down on a summer learning symposium at a table with a gentleman who was trying to push his facts through and saying things, we can't have these big guys competing against women. And I just looked at him and said, I don't think that's true. And I ended up leaving the table, and it was, and at WASB, the Wisconsin Association of School Board, has always, I mean, this person has been trying to put through policies to change it on a school board level, and WASB has declined, and we as school board members have declined this. So it boggles my mind that WIAA can have this much power. It bothers me. I don't get it. I don't understand it. I mean, there's still a lot to learn about these kind of things. And at best, it should be an individual categorization. I mean,
right. And they are not the only body that is working with this issue. And you note that the International Olympic Committee and other sports bodies have recognized that it's not about transition per se, but the timing of it, particularly where it occurs, you know, in terms of puberty. And certainly, we're talking about things like testosterone levels, not simply the fact that there's been a transition or treatment, but again, time, testosterone, a whole lot of other factors that the International Olympic Committee is trying to be cognizant of. And you're concerned that the WIAA is being a little too simplistic about this, I think.
It varies. And their policy was just very simplistic. There was no whys or wherefores about it. It was just a very simple statement saying this is the way it is. And I don't think they gave it any thought whatsoever. And it just seems punitive to me and dictatorial. Like I said, I did the research. The timing is important. And the thing is we don't know what's going on in anybody's mind or head or physical things. And it is something that you need to consider personally, it's, I think they're pandering toward the fears of other people who don't have an understanding of what's going on. And frankly, why do we care? I mean, it's really small numbers, and it's really important.
Really small.
Really small.
and it just, again, it provides opportunity for talking points, but also, as you note, privacy violations. The current policy, you write, forces families to engage in legal proceedings to secure their children's right to participate, which inherently compromises student privacy. It exposes personal medical information and gender identity status in public legal proceedings, violating the fundamental privacy that all students deserve. Or, to put it a bit more crassly, but it certainly has been, so I'm not saying anything that hasn't been said before, the fact that some people want to do this is going to mean that a whole lot of other kids are going to be traumatized by either a coach, a school official, a lawyer, somebody. That's kind of, they're going to want to look down a kid's pants. What the heck is this?
When I was meeting with some legislators, an aide said that to me, that somebody, a representative said that, well, just check them. And I'm like, oh my gosh. I mean, and as my daughter says to me, she says, Mom, it's weird that these people care so much about children's privates.
Yes.
It's weird.
It is weird, and it hasn't been said nearly enough, but yes. It just is. So let's try to look forward on this, and we're talking to Carolyn Bonanno from Baraboo about this letter she wrote to the WIAA, and you asked the board to consider several things. You write, for example, developing individualized assessment protocols that consider factors such as hormone therapy duration, individual athletic metrics, consulting with medical professionals, sports scientists, LGBTQ+ advocacy groups, and review policies from other states and organizations that have developed more nuanced approaches. I think that's the key word there, is nuanced or individualized or consulting. All of these things sound like best practices moving forward.
Yeah, exactly. And that's what the world of medicine is, best practices. It is evidence-based. And that should be how everything is. Things should be based on evidence, on what is least destructive or hurtful to other people, and if it's even a necessary thing. You have to look at these things. You don't just willy-nilly. This is how dictatorships happen. Yeah. People just fall in line, and nobody says anything. So yeah. I felt it was important to say something.
And so you urge them to refocus the WIAA's mission on supporting and including all student athletes rather than operating as a restrictive enforcement body, return to the core educational mission of fostering student development through athletics rather than creating barriers that force families to choose between their children's privacy and their right to participate in school activities. So that was the note. The letter was dated May 22nd. Has there been any response or reaction since then?
No.
Nothing.
Nothing. I emailed the members individually, and I sent this letter, and I have not heard a thing back.
And it sounds like there's no current plans to reconsider or do anything else on the issue?
No.
On the comment sections here from CT, the ban on transgendered student athletes buys into the notion that women are inherently weaker than men, which is ridiculous. And Alicia notes that policies like this do way more harm than good. And I mean, none of this strikes me as so unwieldy that you can't consider a better path forward.
Exactly. But I think that because of the current political ish system, we have somebody who thinks that he can just tell people what to do without any backlash. And whether you have it or not, he will just do what he wants. And it seems like the WIAA just fell in line. And well, unfortunately, and it's bothersome to me. I'm sorry. It's bothersome to me because I thought that the school boards were supposed to give guidance to the WIAA, and it doesn't seem to be that way. It seems to be the other way around.
Well, it does. And when you talk about one individual, it certainly is about more than just, say, you know, who is president. Mm-hmm. You have, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss, who has held up millions and millions of dollars in UW funding to attack diversity, equity, and inclusion. And I think again, I'm projecting, but I wouldn't be surprised if WIAA board members were mindful of that and didn't want the Speaker of the Assembly threatening to cut off funds for high school sports and, you know, being focused on state budgets and school district budgets instead of the welfare of our kids is a hell of a way to run the state.
Exactly. And it seems to be backwards in my estimation, but...
Well, it certainly does, and that's why I really appreciated your willingness to come on and talk about the note that you sent. I hope you keep us updated, Carolyn Bonanno, as far as whether you get any kind of a response and any possible path forward. Carolyn, thank you so much for your time. We really appreciate it.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. A local update is coming up next for some of you, and then in our next hour, we will be talking to Earl Ingram about things happening in the Milwaukee area. We will also have Jimmy Koska coming up next for some of you, talking about what he's seen from Southwest Wisconsin, and then an hour later, James Kelly from Northwest Wisconsin, doing the same thing as we do here, mornings, powered by Up North News, across the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
If you know anything about baseball, you know the concept of a utility player who can play a whole bunch of different positions at ease and is not just capable but comprehensive in those positions. That brings up Jimmy Koska, who joins us now, because we are going to talk about we are all over the board in this particular segment. Jimmy, good morning.
Morning.
Well,
I honestly thought you were talking about Anthony Sigler. So
we are going to get to the Milwaukee Bucks. We are going to get to the state budget, but because of the work that you do with sports as well as you've been on a school board, you've been a coach, you're very aware of what the WIAA is doing. So I wanted to give you any opportunity on our last discussion there on the transgender participation policy from the WIAA to give your own insights as to what you've seen being discussed and what the state of things is right now.
Well, I could say that, you know, as someone who follows high school sports, that this was actually brought up during the open session of this April's annual meeting. MMSD, Madison Athletic Director Jeremy Schlitz, actually had a nearly 5-minute statement on trying to reverse the policy. And I mean, he hit on all the things that you talked about in the last segment about, you know, what this is doing and targeting certain student athletes and just how quickly the policy came about without a whole lot of discussion, things like that. It's a terrific watch. If you can watch it for free on the NFHS website through the WIAA. If you watch the annual meeting, we've covered it here at Civic Media, of course, as well. But it was a really fascinating statement from a school board perspective. Anytime there's any change to things like Title IX, things like that, just in the vein of not wanting to risk losing that bit of federal funding that schools get. It's not a big part of the budget, but in the age of school funding being what it is, any loss in funding would be pretty huge. That's why when the Department of Education talks about eliminating things like title funding, it's huge because that's positions, that's services for students. When we get things like a Title IX update, it's mostly a check the box, you know, board vote to go along with whatever it says, right? So as a school board member, you know, there's not a whole lot of discussion you have on it. There's not a lot of local control on a thing like that. But I really do appreciate having that discussion because those sorts of policies that seemingly target just a handful of individuals, like those are pretty important. So.
Yeah, worthy of ongoing discussion here. Let's turn to the state budget, where the agreement does include $194 million for UW Lacrosse to construct the Prairie Springs Science Center and demolish Crowley Hall, which, this is alarming, lacks fire suppression. Something Earl Ingram and I have talked about in the past with, you know, apartment buildings, but this is a dorm. Failing mechanical systems and so forth. The expansion will support STEM education and workforce development. These are always political footballs in terms of you can only say yes to so many things in any given budget, but this is a pretty nice win for UWL.
Yeah, last budget cycle, it was UW-Madison and UW-Whitewater getting some capital projects, right? This time it happens to be UW-Lacrosse and a handful of other projects around the state where you have these, you know, multi-million dollar capital projects, these building projects. Eau Claire had one. These are part of the budget process because they are big price tags to take to do these things. So, yeah, for lacrosse, you know, UW-Lacrosse, this is the latest in the line of these projects that have been kicked, the can's been kicked down the road enough times that it just has to be addressed. And, you know, this isn't, you know, you talk about lack of, you know, fire suppression, things like, you know, things in the crumbling infrastructure of some of these buildings. I guarantee if you take a closer look, there's many more examples of things like this in the UW system.
Hey, Pat, you muted yourself.
No, I didn't. I did.
I didn't
see
do
what
it.
Happens when you take.
I was trying to read lips, but it was
slurp
tough.
You take that slurp of coffee and you try to be polite, and then boom. I was saying before I so rudely interrupted myself by muting myself that we'll try to get to a couple of news notes if time allows. But I do want to get to all of these changes on the Milwaukee Bucks roster because I don't follow them closely. I just know that from the championship team, there's Giannis and Bobby. And what I'm seeing is that's pretty much it, that there's been quite the turnover. What can you tell us about all of yesterday's moves?
So everything has really been done in just kind of an all-in effort to update the roster to contend this year. There was some talk about, you know, hanging on with Damian Lillard, waiting to see what happens after his injury and taking what essentially would be a gap year where the Bucks just let Giannis run wild and hope for the best this year. Well, that's not been the MO of John Horst of the Bucks front office. They have made a lot of creative moves and a lot of what some people are calling desperation moves to stay in contention. But when you look at the end result of everything that happened yesterday, the Bucks got a lot younger and they put themselves in a position to begin to work to contend right now. There's probably still a move or two away from being a true title contender. But if you look at the Eastern Conference, the representative in the NBA Finals, they don't have Tyrese Halliburton, the Oshkosh North native, tore his Achilles. So he's not going to be available for most of the year. And one of their other top pieces, Miles Turner, well, he's now a Milwaukee Buck. So the Eastern Conference still has some good teams, but you know, you look at it, it's not like there's some juggernaut that you have to overcome. So for the Bucks, it was a matter of making moves to be in a better position to contend right away without completely mortgaging the future. When you have Giannis Antetokounmpo, you have a shot, right? So you got to build around him and give yourself a shot to win. That's what everything that happened yesterday was all about.
So are Indiana Pacers fans kind of pulling their hair out at losing a player like Miles Turner to the Bucks?
He wanted to stay there with Indiana, but they got lowballed. So the Bucks swooped in, and they pick up a great center to pair with Giannis going forward.
All right. And let's get back to one other news note. The Black Hawk Bridge, you say here, is going to stay open all summer. What's the background on that?
So this is a 94-year-old bridge that connects Crawford County, Wisconsin, near DeSoto to Lansing, Iowa. There's a bridge that's replacing it being constructed alongside of it. And in the last year, that 94-year-old bridge has been closed twice for emergency repairs. So this bridge was slated to be closed later this year after July 4th. And the Iowa DOT yesterday said, now they're going to hold off till the end of the summer. It has frustrated people on both sides of the river, business owners especially, because, you know, that uncertain date in the future of when it'll close is going to affect them. But it is good news if you're someone traveling this summer, as now you don't have to detour north to Lacrosse or south to Prairie du Chien.
I told you Jimmy Cusco was the utility player for Civic Media, and there he goes, proving it again. Jimmy, thank you so much. Have a great 4th of July holiday. We'll talk to you next week.
You too, man. Take care.
All right. Coming up in our 8 o'clock hour, Earl Ingram and Melissa Baldoff. And remember, you can follow my team from Up North News all day long through our newsletters, social media, website, and of course, here mornings on the Civic Media Radio Network.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.